Welcome to the History Reviewed channel, where we analyze the lies and deceptions of history. What you're about to hear is a recording that I did on 25th of January 2020. And the photos that you see are photos that I took of Ronnie Casserolls. Who is Ronnie Casserolls? Ronnie Casserolls is one of the top Jewish communists in the time of the war between the blacks and the whites. This guy was a very senior member of the South African Communist Party. This is your classic Jewish communist, actually. This is exactly the kind of person that Adolf Hitler and the Nazis fought against, Jewish communism, or as they called it, Jewish Bolshevism. In fact, in the days when I had my Jewish friend, I actually raised the issue of Ronnie Casserolls, this very guy, whom you see the photo of, which I took on the 25th of January, I actually raised the issue of this guy, is this guy a Jewish communist? There was a time about 10 or so years ago when I spoke to my Jewish friend one day and I said to him, you know, didn't Adolf Hitler say something about Jews and communism? Jews being communists or involved in communism? And my Jewish friend went to great lengths over the next week to tell me that Ronnie Casserolls is not Jewish. However, as you will discover in my recordings of the 25th of January, you will hear out of the mouth of Ronnie Casserolls himself, as well as the Jews who were present at the meeting, you will hear them all talking about being Jews and Jewish. Yet my friend had gone to great lengths to tell me, no, Ronnie Casserolls, no, he's not Jewish. And his reasoning, I'll get back to the story, but his reasoning is, well, you see, he's an atheist, therefore he cannot be a Jew. And that is the line he took back then. But he's a Jew. His parents are Jewish. His grandparents are Jewish. He grew up in a Jewish community. He identifies with Jews. He's got family in Israel. And there he is, welcomed by the Jewish community. And they're all talking about we Jews. And they're also talking about we whites. So just a bit of background about this recording. The day before this, on the 24th of January, one of my very loyal supporters, a lady, sent me a message late in the evening. It was a Friday evening. She said to me, Jan, tomorrow Ronnie Casserolls is going to be at a book launch. And it's very close to where you live, and you can go there, and I'll give you the address. And I said, yeah, sure. And the more I began to think about it, the more I began to think this might be a really good idea. And I went there, and when I was there, I asked the person hosting this talk, I asked if I could take photos. And I was told, yes, you can go ahead. So I took photos, and I recorded the entire talk. And I got a chance to ask Ronnie Casserolls a question. This is actually the second time in my life that I've had a chance to talk to this Jewish communist. The last time was sometime in the period 1993 to 1995. He doesn't know about the time that I spoke to him before. But I can show you some of the stuff that I got as a direct result of my discussion with him. And One of the things that I got as a result of my discussion with him was his book, Armed and Dangerous, which had just come out, and he was boasting about it. But he also told me where to get other communist literature, which is what I was really after at the time. I must have had a 20-minute discussion with him back then. I phoned up the Communist Party headquarters in Johannesburg, and I said to them, listen, I'm a budding communist. I'm very, very interested in communism. I want to learn as much as I can about communism. The reason I said that was because I was looking for communist literature. I had heard that the communists, the South African Communist Party, has got a journal, and the journal is called The African Communist. And I wanted to get my hands on that journal because in the Communist Party journal, I wanted to see what these scum-sucking pigs have in store for us whites in South Africa. So one day I hit on the idea, let me phone the Communist Party, and back then we didn't have cell phones, we just had landlines. Let me phone the Communist Party and see if I can find out how do I subscribe to or get copies of The African Communist. Well, to my utter amazement, when I phoned them, they said, yeah, we'll put you through to someone. And they put me straight through to Ronnie Kasrils. He and I had a 20-minute discussion. I kid you not. The two of us had a long 20-minute discussion. And I was saying to him, I'm so interested in communism. Where can I get literature? And he said to me, well, what you do is you go into Johannesburg and you go there, and in there at on that street corner, you'll find that little shop and you'll find all our literature there. And I went there, and in that little shop, it was filled with communist literature from all over the world. I'd never known that there were so many communist publications in the world. My jaw just about hit the floor. There was communist magazines and journals from all across the world, Europe, you name it. And it is there that I went and I got copies of The African Communist. And I managed to get a couple of copies over a period of time because I wanted to read what have these people got in store for us. And I still have those very journals that I got back then. I still have them in my possession. But anyway, here was a chance to talk to him face to face. And I went with my friend and we listened to his talk and the question and answer session about his latest book, his third book. And I was looking for an opportunity to try and ask him a question. And they didn't have much of a question and answer session, but I managed to get the first real question in. And I'd thought hard about how I'm going to phrase this thing in the hope that I can get as much information out of him as possible. And I gave him a story, and he actually went on and he started talking quite a lot. And he actually said a whole bunch of interesting things, really interesting stuff. And I did my utmost to be friendly and to try to encourage him more and to see if I could possibly get in a second question. But somebody else came and asked another question and then they cut the rest of it short. But I did get quite a good chunk of time where he spoke and he answered my question. What you are actually going to listen to now is the question and answer session where I managed to get in and I asked Ronnie Kasrils a question. I tried to make the question friendly because in the atmosphere that had been created earlier, they were trying to stay out of politics. Most of the attendees were either Jews, and there were some English-speaking whites. So it was Jews and your typical liberal, weak, sheep-like South African English speaker. Sheep-like and fitting in with Jews. So these people were not critics or enemies of Kasrils. And Kazrils felt at home. And the whole thing was, like I say, mostly Jews, but also these English speakers and a couple of Afrikaans people here and there. But this is what the audience was like. And they were quite old. There were very few young people there, if any. And they had already said they're not going to discuss Zionism, but then they said, well, we might discuss Zionism, because now apparently there's a debate between the Jews, because Kazrils is anti-Zionist. And this is an example of the Jews sort of arguing among themselves, but don't get your hopes up, okay? Don't get your hopes up. Don't imagine that these Jews are going to go and slit each other's throats. That's not going to happen. They sit and they argue, but it's small arguments. It's like when the blacks argue with each other. In fact, the blacks are more violent when they argue with each other. But in this question and answer session, I didn't want to come across as somebody as the enemy. So I was trying to get a sense of stuff and try and get information out of him. My real key interest was in Dr. Verwoerd. And Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd was Dutch, and he was the greatest leader South Africa had ever had in its entire history. And what most people don't know is that this guy was a closet National Socialist. He was a Nazi. So if you want a guy who was a true Nazi, who ruled a country after Adolf Hitler, Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd of South Africa is the prime candidate. And just like George Lincoln Rockwell, Jews hated him to such a degree that there were two attempts on his life and the second one succeeded. We're going to come back to the topic of the Jewish role in the killing of Verwoerd. Verwoerd was hated by the Jews, and the hatred is downplayed. People don't really realize it in modern times. And this guy was the greatest white leader in the history of South Africa. This man did more things for South Africa than you can believe. So you will always hear the Jews and everybody talking about Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd, the architect of apartheid. But keep in mind, Verwoerd was born in Holland. He also did some schooling in Rhodesia, but he lived in South Africa for most of his life, and he became the Prime Minister of South Africa. And this man was extremely brilliant. He was the greatest leader this country has ever seen. The greatest things that ever happened in South Africa and that happened for whites happened under his rule. So remember, the greatest leader in the history of South Africa was a Dutch Nazi who identified and was totally part and parcel of the Afrikaners, the Boere. I decided therefore to ask an open-ended question on the basis that I might only get one shot at asking him something. So I tried to sort of sneak in and get my question in, and when he was answering, I was smiling and I was going like, wow, wow, and encouraging him and looking for an opportunity to try and get in a second question. And in the end, about the only thing I managed to say was that, yes, I've got your book, Armed and Dangerous. But they then maneuvered this thing, and the next thing was somebody else came in, and then they got it away from this topic. But I did manage to get quite a lot out of him. And you'll see how he answered my question. So I tried to get a question on Verwoerd and Mandela. And in his reply, he actually gives away a lot of stuff. In his reply, he tells us how Verwoerd was hated. But he doesn't say Jews hated Verwoerd. He claims that everybody hated Verwoerd. And then he goes on to say that the mass media was constantly saying Verwoerd must go, Verwoerd must go. But it's actually the English mass media that was saying that. And it was as a result of that that he was then shot. Now, this thing of Favut must go, Favut must go, those of you who know more about Jews, you'll know that it's not the English mass media, it's the Jewish mass media. Jews are pushing the agenda here. Jews are the ones creating this Favut must go, Favut must go. And there are even some newspaper headlines from the past that you can read that are on the internet which show, you know, Favut must go, Favut must go. So he talks about Favut, and then watch how he says, well, you know, Favut was maybe decent, but, you know, he was absolutely insane. Eventually, the hatred, the sheer hatred for Favut comes out in his own mouth. And then he goes on and he starts talking about Nelson Mandela and a black chief called Luthuli. And he also actually mentions, by the way, that he thinks Luthuli was a greater leader than Mandela, and that Luthuli died mysteriously by falling in front of a train. And he thinks that somebody pushed him. So I'm not sure if he's saying that the whites had an agent who pushed Luthuli in front of the train, or whether blacks among themselves had an agent who pushed Luthuli under the train. But somebody killed him, and he alludes to this very strongly. But then listen carefully to his glowing accounts of Nelson Mandela. Every Jew that I've ever met who's actually met Mandela talks like Kasrils. In fact, the way that Kasrils speaks in this entire session is very similar to the way my Jewish friend used to talk to me. Similar tone of voice, similar kind of Jewish humor. You won't see it in here, but when you listen to the entire discussion, you'll hear him going off down his little Jewish path, and he starts giving you his little Jewish funny story. My Jewish friend used to talk exactly like that. Similar tone of voice, similar way, very similar. And he was an older, much more educated Jew, so he wasn't just any Jew. He was pretty good. He knew history, he knew politics. And it'll give you a sense of the kinds of discussions that I had with my Jewish friend before I kicked him out of my life. Now, my Jewish friend also told me one day, he said, I've met Nelson Mandela in person. And I was like, really? And then he started talking about Mandela, and he was like, you'd think he'd met God himself. Oh, so great a leader, so awe-inspiring, blah, blah, blah. There was another time I met a half-Jew, and this half-Jew had to do with a security company, and I met the half-Jew and got to know him quite well. I didn't know he was a half-Jew, but much later he told me he was a half-Jew, and he cut off contact with me the moment he realized that I was anti-Jewish. So initially I went and dealt with him on the basis of security in our area. And then as we got to know each other, that's where one thing led to another. And eventually he discovered I'm right-wing, and he discovers I detest Jews. Then he kicked me out of his circle, and he immediately hooked up with Jews, but that didn't work out so well for him. In the end, he lost his position anyway. But the point is that this half-Jew that I met, he also told me a story about how he'd met Nelson Mandela. And it was exactly the same as what you're going to hear Kasrils saying. He starts, oh, he's so awe-inspiring, he's so incredible, they've got such intellect, oh, blah, 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 blah. You'd think he's just met God himself. So listen to this. Listen to him talking about Favut. And then listen to the things he says, the information available about Favut. And then you'll start finding how, you'll see how he starts trying to say that, well, you know, Favut might have seemed nice, but he was really insane. You know, he's starting that Hitler-type attack on Favut. He was nice, but he was really insane. And, you know, really deep down, blah, blah, blah. And then then watch when he switches over to Mandela. And then it's like, oh, he's so awe-inspiring. He's so incredible. And whites in South Africa, the mystery for the whites of South Africa is that whites in South Africa do not know. They do not know that the Jews hate their guts, and the Jews have got their outlets in the mass media around the world. And one of the mysteries for the whites of South Africa has always been, how come this fucking Nelson Mandela fucking terrorist, how come this Nelson Mandela terrorist, why is he like a god? Why is he treated like a god around the world? There's even like an international Nelson Mandela Day. Like international. Where does that come from? Well, I'll bet you it all comes from Jews. And these whites in South Africa, especially the Afrikaans speakers, they don't know why it is that this fucking enemy fucking terrorist has got such good publicity all around the world. They just can't understand. You know, is the world insane? You know, doesn't the world realize he was a terrorist, a murderer, a communist terrorist? He plotted the deaths of people. He advocated killing of people. He was responsible for bombings. Why isn't anybody seeing that he's an evil piece of shit? Well, the answer, as you will discover more and more, is Jews. It's Jews, and I will show you more about on this same topic. But here, as a starter, is Ronnie Kasrils. And watch Ronnie Kasrils talking about Verwoerd and talking about Mandela, because those were the two questions I asked about him. And you'll see how he talks about Verwoerd and how he eventually gets into, you can see he absolutely hates Verwoerd. And he starts saying, well, you know, he has to be insane and so forth. Just like they say about Hitler, you know, oh, Hitler, he was a madman, he was crazy, blah, blah, blah. Just listen to Ronnie Kasrils go into exactly the same thing over Verwoerd. And then he blossoms out into, oh, Mandela, so fantastic. So then look at the way he talks, and then go and ask yourself, why is it that the mass media of the English-speaking world is saying apartheid bad, Hendrik Verwoerd wrong, evil, evil apartheid, and good Nelson Mandela? The mass media of the entire world is echoing what the Jews think. The Jews set the cultural tone for the entire Western civilization. Jews set the tone for everything. Jews control people's minds. Jews see to it that their viewpoints become your viewpoints. That's what Jews do. And it should be very clear in this discussion, right out of his own mouth, you watch how he handles the answering of this question. And all the time, I was like, wow, 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 and hoping to get in a second question. But then somebody cut me off, and then they did a little question, and then they terminated the thing. They said they'd run out of time and all that. But I was really pleased with what he said, because in there, he starts telling you other stuff. He gives some additional information. The first guy who went and shot Hendrik Verwoerd was a guy called Pratt. And Pratt seems to be some kind of Englishman. He doesn't seem to be Jewish, but he seems to be an Englishman, a wealthy Englishman, very liberal, very under the influence of Jews. And this Englishman walks up to Verwoerd and blows him away. He fires straight into his face. It is almost a miracle that Verwoerd survived that. He was very, very lucky. And I must tell you, South Africa's first-class science and medicine of those days comes through. Verwoerd could have been as dead as a doornail. It was a very close-run thing. I will show you later the direct Jewish link between Pratt and Pratt shooting Verwoerd. But in here, you will hear him talking about Pratt. You'll hear him talking about him having a farm where blacks can go to. You'll hear him talking about being a wealthy businessman with a factory. And you'll hear that I think his father was a friend of Pratt. So you will see some of the Jewish links and Pratt being well known and well respected by these Jews, you'll see that coming out right here in this thing. And to me, this is unique. I've not heard this kind of testimony or seen any testimony like this anywhere else. I also did a bit of noise reduction and sort of volume fixing so that the sounds are much clearer. So there's a little bit of tin, but otherwise it's a lot clearer. And you should be able to hear very clearly everything he says. Here is the question and answer session.
Discovering when his films were made, you know. So the Google, it took me a minute, 2 minutes, and I had it. Thank you.
Are there any questions for Ronnie? Bill? Mark? You heard it?
May I ask some questions? I'd like to ask a little bit about the early days of your time in the ANC. The sort of rough times, because I think you spoke about the recreation of, or the rebuilding of the ANC. I have two kinds of things I'd like to ask. The one is, how important was Nelson Mandela as a figure that stands up against the system? And how was Verwoerd? Was he like a nightmare kind of a person who's busy just crushing things and smashing things down? How did you guys see those two people?
So I'm going to start with Verwoerd, and then I come to Mandela, who I actually knew. So in those days, there was no television, and you had South African, you know, Movietone News, South African one, in the cinemas, and that was the only time you might see Jan Smuts or Verwoerd, or unless you went to the rugby Springboks and so on, and you kind of tried to gauge what they were like fleetingly from a newsreel. Otherwise it was photographs in the newspaper, and then it depended on how people spoke. So the English-speaking press had a campaign going at this stage leading to David Pratt shooting Verwoerd at the Rand show. And my father worked for David Pratt's family, by the way.
Oh, they wow.
The downtown Dorfontein sweet factory. And the Pratts were very nice people. My father told me, you know, when all this happened, the only family in the Magaliesberg with a huge farm, where they farmed, and that's where David Pratt was. His brother, Stuart, was my father's boss at Crispy's Candy. And my father told us that the Pratts allowed anybody of any race to picnic on their farmlands. So non-white people who had scant place to go when they wanted a picnic, they all used to home in on their farm. But why did Pratt, who was not very political except English speaker, so, you know, the apartheid aspect, they might have voted United Party, not very, very, very militant or anything, but Verwoerd was so identified with what was going wrong in the country and with apartheid as the architect, that the English-speaking press were running a campaign, Verwoerd must go. And it was almost daily in the Sunday papers and the headlines, Verwoerd must go, you know. And this is what got through to David Pratt, clearly turned his mind in that kind of climate. It's only in latter years that with Google and so on, you can actually check Verwoerd and his speeches at the time and interviews with him. And I'd heard this about Verwoerd, that he was an avuncular character. and he would discuss apartheid policy in very reasonable ways, and we're not against the black man, but we're different, the races are different, we don't want to take advantage of people, and therefore apartheid is simply to keep people in their own categories so that there's peace and progress. And the black person, the Khoza in his category, and the Zulu in his, and the colored in theirs, they must have their own space, because God did not want people to mix. This is what causes trouble. And he literally speaks this way. It's like a mad professor who's totally carried away with an absolute evil doctrine, the result of which is this incredible suffering of people. And in those days, one didn't see this aspect of Favort. And it doesn't mean he wasn't evil, but he was just known as this is the architect of apartheid, and totally hated and loathed, except by those who, in their view, we must keep totally apart. Now, this doesn't go against Jews having their own particular community, or Irish, or 1820 settlers, or, you know, or the Scots, or whatever. But it's where you come together for your own particular culture without denying others and equality and justice and so on. And the whole apartheid thing puts into actual legal effect the group areas of act, the dispossession of land, you know, that whole gory detail. So he was an absolutely horrendous character who was responsible. But there, in personality terms, there were far worse guys who were absolutely guttural and vicious, whereas Favort never raised his voice, he never screamed and shouted and banged tables and threatened people. But, you know, he was obviously a guy that people would have, if they knew him, have a bit of second doubt. And, you know, but he's a very kindly, uncle-y, avuncular figure. Nelson Mandela, by the time I become aware of him, is the 1959, the treason trial, which is 56, and I'm kind of in the trick. So one's aware that, you know, without any personal knowledge or detail about people like Chief Albert Luthuli, about Mandela and the others, and you don't have any idea of what they actually stand for, that they are standing for a non-racist South Africa in which we'll live together and in a democracy and so on. The whites don't have any knowledge of that. Unless you have a teacher like Teddy Gordon who gives me or directs me to read a book by Trevor Huddleston, North for Your Comfort, which is a brilliant book about what apartheid is. So, you know, when you see photos of a Mandela or even a Chief Luthuli or a Trevor Huddleston, you think that these guys are, if they're black, are like racist and wanting, like people would think today to some degree, through the years, that the word terrorism wasn't in the vocabulary at that time. But, you know, these are the leaders of the natives who will kill all of us whites. And absolutely far from that. By the time I become politically aware and joining, I then have recourse to speeches, pamphlets, even some books were available about the ANC and about Mandela or Luthuli, and you then become really very, very impressed. When you start actually meeting these people, then you are blown away, because these are people with incredible intellect, And, you know, you've grown up as a white, and no matter how liberal you might be, the blacks you know are people in menial service who don't have a good English. And here you're suddenly meeting these black guys who have an English language and vocabulary far better than one's own, and who are extremely kind people, serious, discuss things, give their time, if there's the opportunity to answer a question, because we would then meet as a small group of whites who I was attracted to, these house meetings, like a meeting like this, but it would be illegal, so we couldn't all leave our cars the way we have today, and yet it would be at night and you'd come in, it wouldn't be as big as this, but maybe a dozen people, and there would be somebody like a Mandela who's there to actually tell this group who are seriously interested what does the ANC stand for. So I met Mandela a little later. I'd met a few others beforehand who were leaders, and then I met Mandela when I joined Inkonto Rusizwe, and he came to meet the command group in Durban to brief us and to guide us and to discuss MK. And I write about that in my first memoir, which is Armed and Dangerous.
Which I have.
So, you know, you can try and find that.
Yeah.
But very, very impressive. And that's why, sorry, that's why you've had such respect accorded, not to justice. Mandela's not the flash in the pan. This Chief Albert John Luthuli, I would rate the most impressive, more than Mandela.
Oh, wow.
You know, you've heard the name. He was the president of the ANC, and I think they killed him in about 1966. Yeah. And there's a case that his family are bringing now, because he was a very large, wonderful guy, a bit like Paul Robeson, if anyone knows it, great African-American singer. And he was a great singer. I was in meetings with Luthuli down in the sugarcane fields of Natal, usually at an Indian farm, and there'd be about 50, 60 people from around South Africa. Mandela was out of the country at that time, and Luthuli was like Martin Luther King, even more imposing, because Luthuli was like, you know, a Muhammad Ali. He, you know, that, well, Mandela as well, you know, this big build, and, but he had more girth to him, and a really kind, lovely, he's a very Christian man. Without, you know, not a Desmond Tutu type, but he was very Christian and an absolutely incredible man. So it was said that a railway locomotive knocked him down near his home in Grytville, where he was restricted, banished to. And there's a very big doubt about whether he wasn't pushed into that trap.
Assassination, maybe.
Sorry,
going back to your schoolboy days.
Yes.
You wrote about being at school with Gary Player.
Yes.
Just a few points about what Kasril said. He talks about the incredible suffering of the blacks under apartheid. That is vastly overstated. The blacks of South Africa had the highest standard of living of any blacks in Africa. However, what actually transpires is that you will see that it's actually probably the Jews who guided Mandela. And there are statements that Mandela made where he basically indicates that the blacks need to share in the wealth of South Africa. So it's not about the blacks getting an amount of money that is enough to survive on. It is that the blacks want in on the higher standards of living that exist in South Africa. So these blacks of South Africa, to try and get it in the right context, these blacks of South Africa are not on the edge of starvation. These blacks of South Africa are actually trying to get a chunk of the pie that is South Africa. And South Africa is doing very, very well. And the standards are extremely high. It has very high standards for the whites. Whites are doing exceptionally well. So you must never think about the blacks of South Africa as, oh God, these people are about to starve to death and they're going to drop dead next week. Never at any time in their history were they in such a situation under white rule. They are not in the same situation as blacks further north in Africa who are dying from starvation and hunger. These blacks have got the best standard of living of the blacks in Africa. What you are getting, though, is a lot of Jewish propaganda and black propaganda, where what they're trying to do is they're really trying to play up the differences in standard of living between the blacks and the whites. That's the real game here. So they're not on the edge of death. It's just that they want a bigger chunk of the pie. And he says something about apartheid not actually being against the Jews, and it would allow the Jews and the Irish and others to have their own communities. From my own observations of the ideas that they had about apartheid, the whites who created apartheid, just some other pointers. The original architects of apartheid, many of them were academics, intellectuals, university professors. Verwoerd himself had been a professor at a university. These people who were thinking these things up in South Africa, they weren't a bunch of idiots. They were actually highly educated people, and they were thinking big thoughts. And all the things that they came up with were fair and workable. If you understand apartheid, you would actually say it's actually one of the most humane ideas that has been put forward politically. It basically allows every single tribe, every single community to do its own thing. A definition that I never hear for apartheid these days, but it was a definition that I heard in the past, and which I actually think is the best definition. The definition you'll hear these days is that they'll talk about apartheid being good neighborliness. Verwoerd himself said that. He said that you've got a neighbor and you are good to your neighbor and you get along with your neighbor, but your neighbor doesn't live in your house. P.W. Botha said the same thing. He also spoke about good neighborliness. That apartheid is about, we're going to take people and put them in their areas. Everybody's got an area and we will be happy as neighbors, but they're not going to live in our houses, kind of a thing. But the actual definition that I liked, that I used to hear in the past when I was younger, was separate development. I really think that the term separate development is so beautiful. And it's so accurate, and it's so realistic, and it's what actually happens. Like even now with whites doing their own thing and blacks doing their own thing. The concept of separate development, you cannot get a better concept at all. It says, we're going to develop the way that we want to develop, and you develop the way you want to develop. So if you want to be a communist, you go and do your communism in your homeland and, you know, good luck to you, whatever happens to you. But in our place, we're going to function in some other way. And I like the concept of separate development as one of the best explanations for apartheid. It means that our thinking is not going to be the same as your thinking. And that's fine. You go and think whatever nonsense you want to think and do your nonsense in your own place. We're going to do our stuff our way in a way that works for us. And that's that. But separate development, truly to me, that has always been the best explanation. And having seen how life evolves afterwards, I must tell you, separate development, absolutely the best thing of all. It is applicable worldwide. So just like National Socialism, Fascism, etc., Jews have just been twisting and turning it, turning everything on its head, misrepresenting it. That's not what it was about. There was a thing called the Group Areas Act, and that controlled who's going to live where. So he goes on and he talks, oh, the Group Areas Act. Well, the Group Areas Act was basically what they were trying to do is they were trying to get people to go into their areas and put similar people in similar areas. They created like a township for the Indians, and all the Indians go and live in their township among other Indians. They didn't go and stick blacks among Indians or coloreds among blacks. They went and they created areas for everybody. I truly think it's the best way to live. If you must live among others, then it's the only sane way to do it. And I really think the whites had brilliant ideas. But the real issue is that the Jew is busy with his Jewish game. And as I mentioned in earlier parts of this, the Jews need the blacks. The Jews need everybody, because the Jews are going to take everybody and use them all together against whites. That's the real Jewish game. As you heard, he said that Dr. Verwoerd never raised his voice. He came across as a kindly uncle. And then he says, but he's mad and insane. It's a rerun of Hitler, because Verwoerd was a National Socialist. But that was not publicly known. But they hated Verwoerd. The Jews knew what was going on there. The Jews hated him because he was organizing things. One of the things that Verwoerd really worked on hard was he was very keen to unite all whites. He was trying his utmost to bring the English-speaking whites, which would include the Jews, because the Jews are also classified as white. And he was trying to bring everybody together to work together with the Afrikaans speakers. So it's a lot like the Germans in Germany, and you're trying to get any other whites from other countries who are living inside Germany to work with the Germans. That's all that he was doing. And he was doing his utmost to bring all whites together. Verwoerd was very much a racialist. He wanted all whites, English and Afrikaans, to work together. And he was very successful up to a point, until you find that the Jews have been working on some of the English speakers, and that actually ends up becoming poor old Verwoerd's downfall. He goes on and on about Mandela's non-racist vision for the future South Africa. But I wonder if that is not just the Jewish vision, because Jews have a way of making their values become your values. You will notice that he also mentions that they had to have meetings secretly in the time of apartheid. That is because the South African government enacted a law called the Suppression of Communism Act. Rhodesia also had something like that. In other words, communism is illegal. I think it was a very wise thing that whites did in the past, and I have no problem with it. So these practicing communists had to then sneak around and hold meetings in secret. And as you've seen from the photo, Casrils is giving this talk at a house, and he's saying that this is similar to the way they used to have secret meetings in houses. And from that, whites should also learn a lesson, is if you want to operate secretly, operate like these commies did, these commies and Jews. Go and have house meetings as National Socialists and as whites, supporting whites. Go and meet with your friends and have a house meeting. Do your politics there. These Jews and communists were sneaking around doing this all over South Africa. Jews and blacks and other assorted garbage were meeting in these houses in order to work towards their politics and the overthrow of the white government of South Africa. Just a point for those who might not know. When Casrils uses the term MK, some Americans think that when you mention MK, that you're talking about MK Ultra, which is a CIA program. No, in South Africa, MK has a specific meaning. MK is the abbreviation that they use for the term Umkhonto we Sizwe. So they don't say Umkhonto we Sizwe, they just say MK. And MK is basically the spear of the nation. That was what they called their army. And Ronnie Casserolls himself was one of the founding members of this violent terrorist communist organization. Casserolls himself was one of the founders. And there was another Jew as well that is very important that we're going to get back to, who was also a member of MK. But MK was the armed wing. So here is a Jew who was one of the founding members of the army that is going to fight against the whites. In any country, that would be called treason. But that's just a little bit of additional information regarding what he said there. But notice how, in this answer to my question, notice how Casserolls hates Verwoerd. It comes out clearly. Eventually, he doesn't say he hates him. He says, no, Verwoerd was insane, which he wasn't, of course. But they have to find ways to demonize those whom they see as the enemy. It's a rerun of Hitler and any other white who stood up for his race. In the next video, you'll get to listen to the entire discussion, and then you'll see how comfortable these Jews are with our enemies. You'll see how comfortable they are with communists, chatting to communists. Even the person hosting the meeting will talk with happiness and delight about communists. Oh, I met this communist. And you will see that these Jews are so comfortable among communists. All are enemies. They are meeting with this black and that Indian and so on. And all of them are enemies of the whites. They become people that we end up fighting against. And you'll see how comfortable and happy they are, and how they talk about how wonderful they are. Wonderful people. And it should make whites really think, you know, why are these Jews so friendly and talking so highly of those who plot our deaths? It should let you realize that there's something very wrong here. And yet these Jews had been allowed into South Africa and had been given great opportunities. But a long time ago, before that, the original whites who gained control of South Africa, including Verwoerd himself, had actually said and written in the 1930s that European Jews should not be allowed into South Africa. Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd wrote that in the 1930s. There were many things he wrote about the Jews, and he spoke about Jews controlling the economy in the 1930s already. And he spoke about these European Jews should not be allowed into South Africa. And all the other people who formed the political party that came to create apartheid, all of them, in the early days, they had said and run on the platform that Jews should not be allowed into South Africa. Should not be allowed into South Africa. And the Jews know that. The Jews got into South Africa despite the fact that these whites knew that they were trouble. But that's a whole story for another day. But the battle between the National Socialist Dr. Hendrik Verwoerd and the Jews should be quite evident from this discussion with Casserolles here. You'll see Casserolles, no matter what a nice guy Verwoerd was, never raised his voice. In the end, Casserolles has to say he's insane, because the reality is that by any other measure, you cannot find fault with Verwoerd. But they know that Verwoerd was their enemy, so they have to try and find some way of justifying it. They, of course, never point out the problems that they bring, these European Jews. Some food for thought. In the next one, you'll get to hear the entire discussion, everything that he said, what he said, and I think by the time you go through that, then you will have a good idea of these Jews of South Africa. And these people, they are not a part of the whites, and they do not think like the whites, and they see whites as a problem. And it's basically that here in South Africa, like in America, we are basically getting the whites and Jews clashing in a rerun of the clashes that have happened in Europe over the last more than 2,000 years. Same game is playing itself out. These are my websites, historyreview.com, africancrisis.info, and white-shop.biz. This is my attempt to try and do some Jew-free trading and experimenting with the next level of stuff. So, thank you very much for listening. We'll be chatting again soon. Take care of yourselves.